Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Central Park, arguably the biggest jewel in New York City's crown, is not only the first public park built in the United States, but also the most visited urban park in the country. Its 843 acres are home to 50 fountains, sculptures, bridges, arches, playgrounds, ponds, lakes, a skating rink, a castle, a zoo, a boathouse, outdoor theater, strawberry fields, and the formal conservatory garden, which is made up of the French, Italian, and English gardens. These six magnificent acres are filled with 27 flowering plants, shrubs, and trees. Hannah Cortazzo, my guest today, is a horticulturalist gardener responsible for the beauty that is the conservatory garden. She works for the nonprofit Central Park Conservancy, the official management organization in charge of Central Park. Central Park's a long way from Hannah's hometown, but nevertheless, a perfect match. She grew up within the preserved lands and river system of the Ozark National Scenic Riverways in Missouri, and she says never took her early relationship with or love of nature for granted, even when she moved to more urban areas to go to college. Hannah came to New York City in 2013 for graduate school at Columbia University. 2 years later, she was accepted into the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens internship program, where she received a certificate in horticulture. Hannah was subsequently offered a position as a gardener for the Central Park Conservancy. Additionally, Hannah and a fellow colleague formed a business together, Trees, Thumb, and Thistle. The pair offers designs, installation, and maintenance, their mission driven by their belief in the transformative effect a garden can have, not only on the physical space, environment, and larger ecosystem, but also the people who get to enjoy and interact with it daily. So let's meet this woman inspired by nature. Hannah, welcome, and thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
So you grew up in Missouri on what you call a rare private property. What does that mean?
We were in a protected sort of river system. So it's actually one of the only national parks that protects a river system as well as just, you know, land. And when they converted that land to a national park, there were a few private properties left. My grandfather happened to own one of the cabins, and that is sort of what I consider my true home. It's still very isolated. Takes about 45 minutes driving on unmarked gravel roads and then a little bit on a highway to even get cellular service. He grew up in the area. So his family actually farmed in the area before, you know, it was converted. He worked in CCC camps actually to convert the land into parks in early days. So knowing people in that area, when that property came up as an opportunity, he took it.
So you had a rather unorthodox upbringing.
Yeah, I guess so.
It seemed normal to you. Not that it's not normal, but it's different.
Yeah, I mean, that seeing nature sort of in that sort of preserved state was just sort of something maybe, I didn't take it for granted, but it was a normal thing for me.
Sure.
I didn't realize until you're moving to these larger cities where people haven't even been camping. They haven't, like, you know, I would take them to the cabin. I've taken a couple of friends and partners to the cabin, and they're always shocked by even the noise of all the insects in a untouched space like that.
Did you have neighbors?
There's like three or four cabins within, you know, sort of a mile. Yeah, but not people don't tend to live down there. And we were also sent to a different public school system in Columbia, Missouri, which is sort of a liberal pocket town, I guess, in Missouri, sort of a university town.
Where did you go to college? Because I read that you got a bachelor's in classical languages, which is quite a far cry from nature.
Well, I don't know if it's that far. There's similarities in the study of, I think, language and nature. People think of one as science and one as this sort of like humanities.
Mm-hmm.
But the systematic sort of approach that you can take to it. Also, you know, botanical Latin, you know, it's kind of...
Well, that's a good point.
it sort of helps learn some plant ID. I left for college for university at 16. So I started really young. I had gotten immediately into the journalism school at University of Missouri, which is
sure
quite
known
a nice
for its journalism.
Program.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I saw it more as a trade school in many ways, and I didn't know if that's what I wanted from my undergraduate degree, and I took a classics course and a language course, and it was challenging and it was interesting, and I love the text and the history surrounding it, specifically ancient Greek and Sanskrit. And I did want to do research, and I did some undergrad research while I was there, with some mentors of mine, and I wanted sort of a career path doing that. I lived in a house where it had been broken up in apartments, but everybody else in the house were soldiers, so they were suffering with PTSD. And one of them did sort of, or a couple of them actually did a program, and it had day-to-day difference in their therapy, right, on the quality of their life, and they would talk about what they were doing. And I was like, I want to study that. I want to study sort of affecting change for people in that realm specifically.
And that's what led you to apply to Columbia to get a master's in psychology?
Yeah. So I was PhD actually looking at it. So again, I sort of went the research route and sort of realized that the PhD was more research. And then I looked at it and I said, well, I think I'm more into practicing than sort of being head of designing a program. Mm-hmm. And red tape that goes into PTSD research, specifically with veterans, which is what I was interested in. It wasn't what I wanted to devote 7 years to, right?
So what propelled you to get involved with the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens? Was that just going to be a sideline for you?
In a way, I had about, I love to learn, so I had about four education sort of goals.
Going on at once?
So I had started looking around at maybe master's programs that were different from what Columbia was offering for the psychology thing. And so I knew I was sort of like going to leave that. But then I had done some horticulture therapy volunteering, sort of based volunteering.
What does that mean, horticultural therapy?
You're working with, I was working with sort of older populations, so like nursing homes, mm-hmm. geriatric. And then you're, either helping them plant or pick flowers, or you're using plant material, and it's also sort of in a sort of therapeutic, either just the therapy of being around plants and being around nature, which mm-hmm. is in itself, or you're sort of like actively
connecting nature with people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. So that had interested me, but I didn't really know about horticulture, especially in an urban environment.
So you applied for this internship?
So yeah, I was reading about it and I was like, I'll just go ahead and apply. And I was accepted. And so when I got into that, I dropped it.
You said so long,
it was
Columbia.
It was a full-time program, and it's a little less than a year. So
was that a honing of your skills in a sense? You must have learned a lot.
Oh, yeah, it was beautiful. I learned so much. Part of that program is getting the certificate.
Well, that gives you street cred, clearly.
Yeah. But then you also have, when they asked me at the interview, what's going to be the hardest part of this? I said, maybe working with other people.
Because you're more solitary, you mean?
Yeah. And I didn't know, what my sort of, what my threshold was as far as like everybody working in a different way and how that was going to come together. I had never really liked group projects in school.
Also, nature can, like I said earlier, be very solitary.
It's funny, even in the interview process for this internship, the horticulture director said, sometimes you're going to be working with people who are more comfortable with plants than people.
Than humans,
maybe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's, what I found and what actually made me sort of develop a career or think about developing a career in horticulture was that the people in it are really, I don't know if it's cliche to say there's something about working with green, green space that like, it's not like they all had something I can name in common, but they were all very knowledgeable. I think you have to really know what you're doing in
sure.
order to succeed in this. So, and at the same time, you got to be sort of humble because there are failures every season, right?
That are out of your control.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that is it. And, there's also sort of a deliberate approach to what you're doing, right? But anyway, I just respected almost everybody I came into contact with in the field. And I think that's really continued to be the case.
So you knew you were on the right, no pun intended, path.
Right.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Hannah Cortazzo, who is a horticulturist and gardener. Before I go into moving on to Central Park, mm-hmm. what struck me was this. What's the difference between a horticulturist and a gardener?
In many ways, they're synonymous. I mean, it's funny, when people ask me what I do, sometimes I say horticulturist.
Just to be a show-off?
Well, no. No, I'll say horticulturist, and then I'll sort of be like, gardener, just in case. And some people are insulted. They're like, I know what a horticulturist is. But it's also always, so you get this shocked look, especially in the city, because, I mean, everyone should be aware that there's these green spaces around them. And, in fact, I think that's what makes New York so successful as a city, is that they did awareness and sort of, like, resources given to that, obviously. But still, you say it, and they're like, well, what do you do in the city?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, there's a
short
lot of public
and private
work.
Plants on your
work.
Fire escape, you mm-hmm. know. But yeah. But I want to get back to that. Am I a gardener? Well, I mean, I planted things in space around, you know, yeah. my house, but it's certain, I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, is there some sort of a distinction between horticulture? And I'm not just saying and regular old gardening,
yeah.
but I mean, or the two terms are matched.
If you're, you know, a hobby sort of gardener, right? The way
and have a green thumb.
Yeah, and have a green thumb. That's that there's value to that, right? I mean, you're creating what you want for your own reasons or to help others or whatever reason you're doing it. But I think horticulture, to really do it successfully, right? And sort of the best thing for the plants and the people that are going to be engaging with or sort of being around them is sort of education, right? So soil science.
I was just going to say, is it horticulture is the science?
Yeah.
Of...
I think it does go back to sort of a science background, mm-hmm. which shouldn't be sort of, it's not a scary thing. They're not.
You shouldn't be turned off by it
yeah,
or intimidated by it.
Yeah, it's very, you can learn some pretty basic things and have a solid foundation for even for your own hobby gardening. I would encourage anybody to take classes.
So tell me about getting a job with the Park Conservancy.
When I went to the internship, I like I said, I thought maybe I would just take this knowledge and then use it in a hort therapy in conjunction with whatever education I got afterward. As I got further and further into it, I got, you know, more interest in certain fields of horticulture. I definitely decided I did want to work in the city for a few years in horticulture. And I was already discussing maybe opening my own business as well, but I buckshot my resume, right? There's the Missouri coming out. I buckshot my resume to all the places that I wanted to work. And I didn't even actually limit myself to New York. So I sent off to – I had done a program in Berkeley where the plant palette really struck me out there. So I applied for a position out there. I applied for an arborist position in New Orleans because tree care really sort of interests me, proper pruning and maintenance. And then I started getting calls for interviews and job offers, and I think every interview I went to, I got an offer from.
You nailed it, huh?
Yeah, and I was, you know, I was late. The first time it happened, it was historic garden downtown, and
in downtown Manhattan.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I remembered about a year before that sitting in that exact garden and thinking this would be such a cool place to work or thing to do for a living. And then, like, that's where my interview was.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
And their small greenhouse. So, but anyway, so I had gotten these offers, and then Central Park had emailed me. And they originally wanted me for a wildflower meadow that was going in. That's sort of right above the zoo now, the Dean Wildflower Meadow. And so that was my first interview. And then the second one, they came in, and I was still talking about grasses and wildflowers, which I'm very passionate about, native sort of spectrum plants, right? And then suddenly they were asking me about, had I any experience with tulip mass plantings or...
In terms of the formal gardens,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, these very formal techniques. And you know, it was almost like a bait and switch interview. And I I did, though. I did know. I was also happened to be interested in sort of annual and perennial palettes. So I was offered this job at the conservatory garden, which was a dream. And in many ways, I think because I had these other offers, and some of them were sort of managerial roles even in a private company, like a horticulture manager for doing jobs around the city.
This was really hands-on, huh?
Yeah. But
literally.
Yeah. So, but this one was really the space itself, the conservatory garden, is beautiful, beautiful. And the history behind it. I live up near Fort Tryon.
In Upper Manhattan.
Yeah, and the same woman, Lyndon Miller, who designs or helped redesign parts of the conservatory garden, did the Heather Gardens up there, which I sort of frequent. I met both of them very often. Someone joked the other day that, like, they called me and asked where I was. I said I was in some garden, and they were like, you're the only one I know who leaves their job and then goes to a place that is But I do that frequently. So anyway, yeah. So I had first said, oh, well, let me think about this offer. And then I immediately was like, wait, this is a dream.
A once in a lifetime.
Yeah.
Because Central Park has such cachet. And I've been to the garden. You're clueless as to where you are. You know, I mean, in terms of being smack in the middle of this massive city, there's this peacefulness and there's this, well, I don't want to describe the gardens. You should, okay. Because you work there. So as I mentioned, there's English, French, and Italian, mm-hmm. and they comprise 6 acres.
Yeah.
And you just kind of, in a sense, sashay from one to the other.
Yeah, you can experience it, I think, any way you want to. Once you've been there, I think you could sort of build your own garden experience, right? 3 different, sort of very different styles crammed into like 6 acres, right? Well, we have rotating seasonal displays in both the English and the French, but the French is sort of mass displays, so chrysanthemums in the fall, the green up over the summer, and then in the fall there's this beautiful display right around Halloween, and then a tulip display in the spring. And then our annual beds are, you know, a different design every year.
You design?
No. So that's our curator, Diane Schaub. And she is, I mean, that's actually part of the sort of beauty of working there is getting to see how she works and her knowledge.
How many of you are there?
Yeah. So there's a crew of about 5 of us, I'd say. A groundskeeper, you know, 4 gardeners.
Who are responsible for these 6 acres.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all different viewpoints. I mean, we have one person who really likes the classic plants that are now considered invasive, like mm-hmm. they'll still make an mm-hmm. argument for maybe using them, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. And then we have the hardcore native plant kind of people.
So things change every year while still, in essence, staying the same.
Well, yeah. I mean, this garden has been, you know, almost stayed original to its plans, right? There's been a couple redesigns of the South Garden in particular. But things change, right? I mean, like a tree falls and you have to fill that space with something, right?
Sure.
And is it going to be another tree? Is it going to be another, like, small shrub planting?
And also, sometimes things are just out of your control in terms of Mother Nature's behavior. Mm-hmm. You can plan and you can think we're going to do this, and then all of a sudden you can just have an incredibly dry season, although obviously you water, but it's a different dynamic.
Yeah. And, I mean, the history, right? Pests and insects or disease develop over the years, and maybe a plant that had been working successfully for years, all of a sudden you can't use it because every time you put it in, it's dying from this thing. So, yeah.
So on a day-to-day basis, are you doing something as, and I'm going to use this word, mundane, as weeding?
Yeah, of course. weeding is necessary and important. You know, it's not maybe some people's favorite task. Some people really enjoy it. There's something zen, right, about a repetitive motion task like that.
And do you work in pairs or you work by yourself?
Depends on the activity, right? So if I'm just checking bowl orders, I'm going to be working by myself, maybe, unless they've just come in and we're actually, like, going through boxes. But, you know, if we're doing something with lifting, like a huge soil amendment kind of thing, then, yeah, you want your crew members there. I think we tend to work mostly in a team, right, of 2 to 3.
What do you do in the wintertime?
At this particular garden, there's a lot of shoveling snow, right?
No kidding.
Yeah. Well, we open, you know, we're open all year round, and to make it sort of safe to be there for people, that's sort of a priority.
Do people really come in the dead of winter?
Oh, yeah. And it's beautiful. I mean, people tend to think of these gardens as, like, you know, only dormant, but there's winter blooming, there's there's winter blooming plants. So, yeah.
Right. Naive of me. Sure. Yeah. Of course.
No, but like, you know, that's the thing. Those are those sort of small details that maybe you wouldn't know about.
And I bet that the average person who's in the gardens doesn't have a clue as to how hard you guys work.
You know, I don't know. I think there's split in the public sort of opinion about it. Like, either there's the people who sort of take it for granted that these spaces sort of like maintain themselves, right? Especially if they look like we have a woodland slope, and or people who work on a space like the High Line where it's supposed to, it's sort of a very well designed thing, but it's supposed to sort of mimic or look like nature.
Natural.
But nothing really, nothing maintains itself.
Sure.
You know? But at the same time, I've never worked in a position where you get so many strangers coming up to you and saying, thank you, you know.
Specifically
in this, and that's why I really like the public. I mean, I also work, I do private work as well, but I love working in a public garden because, you know, we're right by a hospital. The conservatory is right by a hospital. And so many people have used the word sanctuary, right? They'll say, this is my sanctuary. Your job, you know, and thank you.
And it's very apt. It really is true that there's this peacefulness and a transcendence that's so wonderful, even if there are, a slew of other people. So explain and talk about your business that you started. That's called Trees, Thumb, and Thistle.
Even when I was starting to think, wow, horticulture could be a career kind of thing, I was kind of nervous about the design class is one of the last ones you take for the certificate. So I knew it was coming up, and I sort of was like, I can do it, but I don't think I want to be a designer for spaces. But then I for my project, I designed a garden for like a family, a multi-generation family that had, you know, grandmother who had, you know, early onset Alzheimer's, and then a child who had sort of was on an autism spectrum, right? So I designed a garden to be sort of a horticulture therapy sort of center for them, and then also at the same time a garden for the whole family to just enjoy for all the other reasons you can have a garden. I created it. Well, I created it with in mind for a family that I know. Yeah, I don't think they have the resources to actually make the garden a reality.
That was your impetus.
Yeah, and it also it allowed me to research horticulture therapy. You know,
well connected to what you were interested in initially.
Yeah, and then also to sort of design and use plants for utility, right, beyond just aesthetic, which is what I was really interested in. And I really loved it. And I, to this day, have this thing of like, well, what are people going to be using their spaces for? Even if it's not hort therapy, right? Even if it's just, I don't know. I like to sort of like, even when people say, oh, I just want green. I just want green in my backyard or on my terrace. You know, I was sort of like, well, is there anything that you want to build the garden around? Like, you know, because that is inspiring to work with to create a space for someone.
Sure, even sure.
I don't know. There was one person who just really wouldn't give me anything. Like they insisted they didn't know anything about plants. And I was like, all right, like what's, you know, they were really into sports. So I was like, you want to do like the colors of your team or something, you know, like something.
Well, who are your clients? Are they individuals? Are they businesses?
Yeah. So,
are they towns?
I mean, it's a pretty young business. So I think eventually, I would like to actually design sort of and install and help, you know, even if it were as sort of what a pro bono work through the company. But for now, yeah, it's private. It's the sort of lucky New Yorkers that have outdoor space and they want something sort of done with it. And we also worked for a museum, an art museum in town with an artist who had plants as part of her medium, but needed help with, you know, installation, maintenance, deinstallation.
Do you have your work cut out for you in a city like New York?
What do you mean my work? Like, does it make it more difficult or does it?
Are there enough people aware of that or enough space to create greenery?
Yeah, definitely. People get really excited and happy about it. I think even you find opportunities because once you mention what you do, people start, you know.
Yeah, you open up a door that maybe they just never thought about. Oh, so I'll buy, you know, a chrysanthemum or I'll get a begonia.
Yeah. No, it's a huge
situation. What about indoor gardens?
I did one that was sort of like an enclosed enclosed by glass kind of room with a nice skylight, you know, on an upper terrace of a building, but
or upper floor, a roof garden, upper floor.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, indoor plants, same sort of thing. You're creating either space or utility or whatever it is that the person wants.
When do you actually start getting your hands on the ground in the gardens in terms of season?
Well, you can be working all year round, you know.
But when the ground is hard and you're shoveling snow.
Right. We do a lot of shoveling snow, and that's especially public space, right? But we're also pruning. It's a really good time to prune trees. Mm-hmm. You can see their form and shrubs. You can see their form. They're not putting out new energy in their it depends on what kind of tree you're working with. But yeah, generally, you can do those things. You can also mulch, obviously.
but you're impacted a lot on the weather. If you're having a really brutal winter where it's just snowing constantly, it really has an impact on what you're doing outdoors.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, and you also get to sort of plan. You get to plan for the season ahead, right? As your
good point.
And you can be putting things in the ground quite late. I was hired fairly late in the season and at the conservancy, and we were still putting bulbs in the ground. You know, just getting around to that. I love it. Yeah, I absolutely love. I love every aspect of my jobs. You know, right?
So. And how wonderful to be able to marry what you do with people who may have some issues and where nature could really help, make them feel better.
Yeah.
That's really a great thing. Well, we've run out of time, Hannah. Thanks so much for what you do, because we're really grateful for that. And if you have not been to the Conservatory Garden in Central Park, mm-hmm. it's a must. It's just a beautiful, I found the word, although it's a cliche, it's mm-hmm. a beautiful oasis.
Oh, yes.
In the city.
Yes. It is. And any season.
In any season, exactly. It's just wonderful. Well, thanks a lot, Hannah. Yeah. I really appreciate your having a conversation with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. And please go to our iTunes store page and leave a rating and a review. And if you know anyone you think that we should interview, contact us at sandyklineshow.com.